prepared to ask Alejandro to be our main speaker tonight.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Alejandro. Thank you guys very much for having me. Terry, thank you for asking me to speak. And, or whoever that's supposed to be. And Jonathan, was it? Thank you for your lead. I relate to a lot that you said there. It's really cool to like be here and see other pockets of AA that resemble a lot of what I admire about my home group. I'm a member of Miami Young People's in Miami. Obviously, that was redundant. But the way that I walked in, and you know, I knew a couple people, so I got to like talk to some friendly faces. But it looks like everybody's been friends for the last 20 years, right? And you know, if you've been in this for a little bit, you could like see God, like in the room and like through the people, and like I don't know, it's hard to explain, right? And I don't think it's meant to be explained. I think it's meant to be felt, right? But I get to see that here today, and I think what you guys have is really cool. I hope everybody remembers that. Some People's Alcoholics Anonymous is in a small town, and it's six old dudes around a round table. You know, this is really cool what you guys got. So thank you for having me. I will start by saying what the members of my home group say, which is my sober date is January 26th of 2018. Home group, again, Miami Young People's. I have a sponsor. He knows he's my sponsor because I still call him regularly. And I have the pleasure of sponsoring other men. And today, right now, I feel grateful, you know? I feel very grateful. I feel... I was at a newcomers meeting this last Thursday, and it's a meeting where, like, newcomers give the topic, and then everybody shares on it. It's a really cool structure. And her topic was essentially people's experience on gratitude and miracles. And I feel like... like, not to toot my own horn, but I feel like I share pretty well and, like, could give, like, a decent response to some things. And I shared on a couple other topics, and I was like, it's probably rude not to share on hers. And when I was sharing on hers, I got stuck. I don't know how to respond to that. I'm grateful for everything. Everything's a miracle. You know, nothing is taken for granted for me. I should be dead. I should not be here. It is a miracle that I'm standing here in front of you, you know? It's a miracle that 8 years have passed, and I went to a rehab with 70 people. I'm the only one that stayed sober. You know, that doesn't make sense. That doesn't track with my track record. I had a success rate of 0%. I did nothing right. You know, I failed at everything. To tell my story in a linear fashion, I guess before I do, I'm going to share my details. You don't have to relate to my details. You know, there's a lot of speakers, I don't relate to the details of their story, but rather I relate to the pain, the hopelessness, the failure, the looking mother or wife in the eyes. I promise I will never do it again. And it happened again, right? And I'm not here to convince anybody that you are an alcoholic or that you are a drug addict. I'm here to share my experience and what someone who has what I have had to do to get out of that, right? But to tell it linearly, my story starts essentially, the first relevant thing is when I was six years old, I was molested, which wasn't an experience that necessarily, like, I was kicking and screaming or anything like that, but it was enough to really mess up my head, you know? And ever since then, doctors have been putting all kinds of labels. Oh, maybe he's bipolar. Oh, maybe he has ADHD. Oh, he has, you know, bad depression or an anxiety disorder, whatever. My emotions got really messed up after that experience. They thought it was ADHD, which was all the rage in the 90s, and I was put on Ritalin and Adderall, and that stuff was so strong, right? And they were like, it's not enough. Let's give them this thing called Concerta, which was super strong. And I was taking a dosage. I was given a dosage that was legal for a child my age by the time I was 9 years old. And it's not to say that, like, my mom made a mistake or she did anything terrible. She really struggled with ADHD, and she felt like it held her back, and she wanted to make sure her son did not struggle in the way that she struggled. But what that did is it had me wired. I was wired at, like, 10, 11, 12 years old, like, all through middle school. And not in a fun way, right? Not in the ways that I experienced later. I if you think about like a school day, right? You're in school for what, 7 or 8 hours, right? Like how many words come out of your mouth in that day? Like you could probably say like, I don't know, 100 words in a minute, right? How many words come out of your mouth in an entire school day? I would say like 50, you know, maybe 100, 200 if you're absolutely lucky. I could not speak. And it wasn't that like, I was like completely mute or something, but what it was, the situation was, these people are socializing, I think they're cool, I want to connect, that's awesome. I really like this thing about them, and I could not have the energy or the power to like bring any words out. I couldn't talk. Right? And what that did is it caused a separation between me and everybody and the world. And I felt exactly what most speakers will talk about, a lack of like connection, always feeling like everybody's standing in a line and there's not enough space on the sidewalk and I'm the guy standing in the back, feeling uncomfortable in my own skin. All the descriptions that I've ever heard alcoholics share up at the podium, I relate with all of them, right? When we're talking kind of about that. You know, and what that led to and why that's relevant is once I drank alcohol, I fell in love. I had an aha moment. Oh my God, this is how I'm supposed to feel all the time. It wasn't just like, this is fun, woo, like this solves every problem that I believed that I had, right? What were the problems that I cared about at a young age? I'm a loser, I'm the ugliest kid in my class, I'm very literally the skinniest, I'm one of the shortest, I'm not funny, I'm not cool, nobody likes me, all this like insecure stuff, and once I drank, all that went away. I'm feeling kind of tough. I think I'm a little taller today, you know, like I feel cool, I feel really funny. It solved everything, and what it did was it allowed me to be somebody that I was incapable of being on my own. I truly felt like drunk me was the real me. This is who I was supposed to be. I don't know what's wrong with me, but like, this gave me like a normalcy almost, right? And you know, I think it was like the second time I was ever drunk, I was at a party, and it was people that like I was friendly with in terms of like saying hi and bye, and we chat a little bit, but I didn't really have like any friends. I had one friend because he liked to drink a lot and, you know, some other stuff that I did with him. And we were at this party and there was a rap battle going on. And I grabbed the mic and I started rapping against the other guy. And like, being very honest, I killed it. Like, I totally beat it. I really, really did. And I had everybody laughing, and I felt like the coolest guy ever, and I felt for the first time what I could never feel on my own, right? And my conception of that experience was, this is the result of alcohol. I love this. Look at what this has created for me. This is awesome. And I truly believed that there was no way possible. Same feeling I felt when I went to rehab, when I came to my first AA meeting. There's no way possible I could be that man without the alcohol. There's just no way, right? Now, a lot of people, or some people will share like, hey, my drinking was fun, 5 years, 10 years, it was a blast, it was a party, and then it got bad, and then it got really bad, and then it got super terrible. I am not one of those people. It was pretty bad from the beginning. First time drunk, I drank alone at my parents' house, and I like flipped furniture and broke stuff, and third time drunk, I believe, I took my dad's car and I told it. And fifth time drunk, my mom and sister picked me up from a party. And before I say this, I was a rebellious kid. I would argue with my family a lot. I didn't have any like serious problem. I had no aggression towards them. I blacked out and they picked me up from this party. I'm in the car with my mom and sister driving home. I'm from Miami, by the way. That's not just where I'm sober now. That's like where I was raised as well. So in Miami, we're on the highway going home, and in this blackout, I start choking my mom while she's driving. My sister, rightfully so, trying to stop me. I punched her super, super hard in her arm, and she had a massive black and blue. Afterwards, she pulled over. I ran on said highway. Very luckily, didn't get hit by any cars. Fell over on the side of the road, foam out the mouth, pale skin, shaking, had a seizure. Right? That's my fifth time drinking, and that was not the last time something like that happened. Right? And the most important part of this story is the next morning, when I woke up, my mom showed me a picture of my sister's black and blue. She said she's staying at Nellie's house. And I had this physical reaction where, like, I'm standing exactly as I am, and, like, everything just buckled, and I was, like, on the floor the next second, crying, screaming, crying. Because if anybody else had done that to my sister, I'd kill them, but it wasn't anybody else. So I'm just filled with shame, regret, and frustration because it was me, and I never thought that I could do something like that. And the most important detail is I told myself something I was going to say another 1,000 times. This will never happen again, right? And at the time, what that meant is I will never black out again, right? I was a blackout drinker. I think I blacked out about 97 to 98% of the times that I drank. I don't have many times that I remember. I got sober at the beginning of 2018, 2016, 2017. I kid you not, I remember about 20% of the year. So next week, alcohol was available to me. And I blacked out even harder than I did the previous week when that incident happened, right? If you hooked me up to a lie detector, I would have passed with flying colors and would have said, yes, Alejandro's telling the truth. He will not black out again, right? So why did I do it? At the time, I didn't know, right? I remember when I was starting to get sober, my dad was like, you just need to be a man and be responsible. Assert your willpower, right? That's not something I have when it comes to drinking. It flies out the window. Right? As soon as I drink, and this is kind of an analogy for the first step, it's like the vehicle is my physical body and my mind decides where we're going to go. You know what? I'm going to walk out of this church right now. I can decide that because I'm the driver. But as soon as a substance or a drink is put into my body, I am in the passenger seat. The passenger has the ability to make a suggestion to the driver where to go. So I might show up drunk at work the next day, but I can't guarantee what will happen. You know? Alcohol or said substance becomes the driver of that vehicle, right? So regardless to, you know, fast forward a little bit, I ended up graduating high school. There's a couple more incidents, and realistically, it's all essentially the same story on repeat. But I graduated high school, and college was like, I'm going to reinvent myself. I chose a school that it made sense that I would be able to drink as much as I wanted to. I chose the backup school because it sounded the easiest, and then I could drink and party and try to talk to chicks. And when I got to this college, the whole idea was I'm reinventing myself and I'll have a new reputation. And it went well for the first 6 months. I made a lot of friends. I had about like 50 friends. I'm not going to say we're super close, but I have like 50 friends I've never had. Like I don't think it's an over-exaggeration that, like, I didn't really have friends in middle school and high school, right? So that was super cool to me, and I had a girlfriend for the first time. And within 6 months of me doing me, I had zero friends. I had one friend. I had one friend who introduced me to, hey, if you add a Xanax to your drink, then this is way more fun, and we did that together for the next 3 years. Other than that, I didn't have any other real friends, and this girlfriend, her parents basically found out about like this time that we drank and did some other stuff, and they were super upset, and they're like, you need to leave that man. And she came to me and she said, Alejandro, you know, they want me to leave you, but I don't want to. So, you know, if you stop, I'll stay. You have to choose. It's me or the drinking and the party. And I meant it. Again, put me up to a lie detector test, I would have passed. I choose you. So why was I drunk 2 hours later? Right? Even with the AA language and the big book language that I know today, it's still difficult to tell you why, right? Because every fiber of my being did not want to do that. It was so utterly against that, right? But there I was. I did it again, right? She left. All the friends left. I got kicked out of the dorms for drug charges, right? I got kicked out of the college right after, and I'm going to keep, obviously, my story to drinking, because my primary problem was drinking. The times I got arrested, I was solely drunk, but I did also fall to my hands and knees, exactly like our founder did, to the combination of drink and high power sedatives, Everything had basically collapsed. I'm out of college. I go to an apartment. I get evicted from that. I had a car that's got totaled. I went to my parents' house. They called the cops on me. I'm not allowed to go there. I'm not invited. I'm estranged from family entirely, not allowed to go to any family gatherings. I don't really have any friends except this one that likes to do what I like to do. I can't really, like, hold down, like, any, like, romantic partners in my life. I remember I was, like, starting to talk to this girl, and she was like, "I'm going, you're drunk." And I'm like, you know when you're, like, drunk and you're, like, kind of, like, leaning, like, super hard? Like, I'm leaning backwards, and the distance from here to that wall, I kept going backwards because I was so off balance, and I kept saying, "No, I'm not drunk, I swear, I'm not drunk," right? But basically, I burned every bridge, everything was going downhill, and me being the alcoholic I am with a disease in my mind that is cunning, baffling, powerful, and trying to convince me that I can control this problem, I'm holding into the last thing that I have. I have never physically been in a jail cell. I have written arrests, evictions, fired from every job, this, and that, but I've never been to jail, so I am not that bad. Until I got arrested twice in the same week, which was probably about a month after this statement. The first time I was blackout at a college tailgate that I wasn't supposed to go to. It was the college I was kicked out of, and I'm, like, not allowed to be there. And I don't know what I did. Campus police show up. They're, like, trying to grab me. I'm, like, winking at him and, like, just being, like, super mean for no reason. And anyways, I get taken to jail for the first time. And I remember when I was in this jail cell, because I was drunk, the detox unit was the same thing as the psych ward, essentially. So everybody's, like, really drunk or really crazy. And I'm in this cell, and it's too inappropriate to say, like, what I saw there, but, like, the situation was crazy enough that me, who had argued with people that you are so stupid, you believe in God, got on my knees, and I prayed what we like to call a foxhole prayer. And I looked up in the sky and I said, "God, as I was crying, if you get me out of this, I promise I will stop." Right? And I got out a day later, and I was back in 6 days later. Right? And because I got arrested back to back, they revoked my bond, so I was not allowed to bond out. I was stuck there. I was facing 4 felonies, so, you know, if that doesn't go well, that leads to prison time. I have no idea how long I'm going to be there, right? This is just all I know at this time, right? And I'm in jail. This time I tried to fight the cop. I have black and blues on my face. And I'm going to share a very unpopular opinion. I enjoyed my time in jail. I really did. Because it was the first time in my life I was safe from me. It was the first time I could not wake up and you tell me, "I can't believe you did this. Yo, this is what I'm gonna do when I see you." Like, nothing, like, no chaos. The hurricane that is me, the storm is put away. Like, I could not mess things up. I could not add to my bank, my very large bank of shame and guilt, right? So I enjoyed my time there. But again, I still don't wanna go to prison. I was about 55 pounds lighter than I am, and I was like, "Dude, I'm not built for this." And I get to serve the end of this, sentencing as we're, like, doing the court hearings on house arrest at my mom's house. And they put two ankle monitors on me, right? One was a GPS. Everybody knows that one. The other one was an alcohol monitor on my ankle, right? It's metallic. It has holes. You sweat when you drink. It can detect the alcohol. And she said, "If you mess this up, you're going to be going to prison for the felonies you're facing." When I got put on house arrest, when I got to my mom's house, I cried and I hugged my mom and I said, "Mom, I don't know how this happened, but I promise I'll stop." You know, like, I really meant that. So why was I drunk the next day? Why the next day did I break the lock of my parents' liquor cabinet and drink? That is who I am, right? Each of these little stories, I don't think they're so important, but they simply demonstrate what it means to be an alcoholic, that I identify with that first step, right? That I am powerless, right? Which I'll get into in a second. But anyways, I drank the entire time. I don't know, maybe God had my back. I did not go to prison. And I found my dead mother's 180 Xanax pills, and I kept drinking. My mom got upset with me, I don't know why, and I pushed her when she broke my Xbox. And when I looked in my mom's eyes, I saw the look of someone who's like getting mugged at gunpoint, like terrified of her own son, right? This is where alcohol has died. You know, like I didn't necessarily directly say it, but I've crossed every line I said I would never cross. Or that I just like subconsciously, obviously knew I would never cross that. I crossed them all. You know, I did so many things that I just thought I would never do, right? And there's a couple fifth step and 8 and 9 step items that I don't know if it's the best to say in such large settings, right? But other stuff that I did that I had to carry, that some I still have to carry, might have to always carry, although it's nowhere near as painful as it used to be, and that I'll also get into, but, right, so the rest of my drinking is the same story over and over. It is just disaster after disaster after disaster, and every morning at the end, there was two thoughts. The first thought was, can we please stop being such a scared little girl and just kill ourselves already? Because it makes logical sense. Because if I was dead, then I can't hurt anybody anymore. And everybody would actually genuinely have better lives. It makes so much sense to do. And then the second one would be like, okay, well, you know what? I need to take the edge off a little bit, but I'm not going to do that much, or I'm not going to mix it with this. And every single day I was wrong for the last 2 years before I went to rehab. The first time I went to rehab, I was drunk every single day I was in rehab, and I got kicked out. And then, after a whole debacle, and oh my god, I pulled a knife on some drug dealers that sold me fake stuff, and they tried to tase my sister, and my parents were pissed, and I got shipped to Delray Beach, Florida. And I went to rehab there, and that place changed my life, and two men specifically there changed my life, saved my life, you know? I know that we give all, like, praise and credit to God, but I give a lot to these two men. They did. I can't put it into words, but I love them. I would die for them, you know? So I was in Delray Beach, Florida. I was in rehab. I didn't really get much out of rehab. The coolest thing about this paid program is that it introduced me to a way better free program. And the H&Is are what really changed my life. And there's these two guys that just spoke super raunchy and yelled and cursed and said wild stuff and made it sound fun and offered to take me to meetings and offered free food and offered beach volleyball. And they picked me up for my rehab, you know? And they would take my calls, and they would talk to me about my problems. And at first, I wasn't willing to be serious, right? Why? Because alcohol has served a purpose for so long. I carry so much shame and misery and guilt and just like neurotic, negative thinking and drinking. What it essentially has always done for me is, I don't care anymore. Life's good, right? Like, it's always done that for me. And living sober was so painful because I no longer have my relief. And, like many good alcoholics, I try to seek a different relief that, like, well, it's not that bad, right? My old grand sponsor used to call it emotional Suboxone. I would chase women. Suboxone makes you feel good enough to not be the real thing. Emotional Suboxone makes you feel good enough to not be the real thing. If I feel terrible, right, and I would abuse it, as many young newcomers do, in terms of, if I feel terrible, am I really going to call my sponsor and go to a meeting when she wants to hang out? Like, are you dumb? Like, why would I do that? Right? So I kept engaging with emotional Suboxone, and I kept drinking. Right? Simple as that. I'm not saying that this is like the perfect suggestion for everybody. Everybody has to stay away. I don't know that. I just know for myself that I had to. I was too young, I was too dumb, right? And so, eventually, after several relapses, after getting kicked out of a halfway that I was really happy to be a part of that community, and relapsing against my own will because I was offered a beer from a pretty girl at a tailgate that I wasn't supposed to go to because I'm in halfway, you know, and then the last time I almost got arrested again, and that was the wake-up call. That was the bottom. My bottom was not something physical. My bottom was not, I went to jail again, or I got my ass beat again, or I went to rehab again, or this like terrible thing happened. My bottom was purely emotional. I just like felt so done. I was like, dude, if I continue this, I'm gonna blow my brains out. I cannot do this anymore, right? That was my bottom at the end. And what actually physically happened is I almost got arrested. But like, you know, I didn't really care too much. But it was a wake-up call, because like the idea was like, I'm gonna drink with the boys. I said that word for word. I'm gonna drink with the boys. Drinking with the boys is not the same as it is for all these normal people as it is for me. I don't know what's gonna happen, right? So I went, I called my sponsor and I asked, I was like, dude, I'll be honest, I relapsed again. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll do whatever it takes to stay sober, right? And from that day on, that's almost my sober day. I was gonna say I've been sober ever since. I almost forgot. 3 weeks later, I went to hang out with this chick and I was super nervous. I felt like she was out of my league, and I did what's, it's like a fake drug, Kratom. I did Kratom, right?
Kratom.
Thank you. All good. I did Kratom. Anyways, from that point on, I've stayed sober ever since, right? And what that looked like, how did that actually genuinely work in real time? The first year of my sobriety, I called my sponsor every day. And that's not like a 364 in 365. No, 365 in 365. The first 90, almost. I think I hit 87, right? And for the rest of the time, I was at a minimum of like 5 until like COVID hit. Right? I took every suggestion. Especially the game changer for me was I began to take the suggestions I didn't want to take. And I started to ask, you know, when you're like early on and you're not super sold about this and you're like, I'm not going to ask my sponsor that question because I know what he's going to say and then I'm going to feel obligated to do it, so I'm not even going to bring it up. I started asking those questions. I started like genuinely, honestly seek, right? And, you know, so I started going through my steps. Every relapse before, it wasn't just like, oh, like, women were just so terrible for my sobriety. I was also happened to be on my 4th step every time I relapsed. What a coincidence, right? And I finally did an honest, thorough 4th step, which terrified me, because if I tell someone all my deepest, darkest secrets, there's no way that you will feel about me any different than I feel about me. That's just not possible. And I told my sponsor, and some of the worst stuff, he's like laughing as like I'm saying it, which like, afterwards, I was like, okay, that's okay, but I kind of felt like weird about it in the moment. But anyways, as I said earlier, why do I drink? Because all this pain and misery and suffering that's just super loudly like resonating in my brain gets quiet and comfortable when I drink. The 5th step was the first time in my entire life, excluding like childhood, maybe then, I don't know. But the 5th step was the first time in my life that the AC turned off, that the rain stopped pouring down, that the loud noise went away with nothing in my system, right? I'm not saying that's gonna be everybody's experience, but that was my experience. I shared a 5th step, and I shared everything I was terrified to share, and I felt genuine peace for the first time ever, right? And it was a beautiful experience. It was a beautiful experience for me, you know? Another thing that kind of like just went with like the whole attitude of what I was doing is my sponsor made it very clear, your thoughts haven't kept you sober, your ideas haven't kept you sober, right? What you say you're gonna do hasn't kept you sober. This is a program of action. Alcoholics Anonymous is not for people who want it, it's not for people who need it, it is only for people who do it, right? And so the saying, the motto for that first year of sobriety, truly living by that, which is catapulted the rest of my sobriety, was F my thoughts, F my feelings, what am I gonna do about it, right? I mean, have you noticed, I don't know how every sponsor sponsors, but at least for me, when I call my sponsor, listen, man, this super complex, very unique problem that I gotta talk to you about, and he's like, cool, do more AA, do good service. No, but you don't get it, like, this is like really delicate and intricate. Yeah, that's cool, go be of service, right? It's always basically that exact same message. Right? And I don't want it to be. But it is, right? And I think the reason why is because somebody told me a while ago, when I provide for myself, it turns to shit. When I provide for others, God provides for me. So my life, I'm a little radical, I feel like, when it comes to this, but my life is not my life. Like, you know, your life, do whatever you want with it. Like, this hasn't been my life in a long time. This is God's life. And don't get me wrong, I'm not a perfect alcoholic. I exert my willpower. I do the wrong things. I can be selfish sometimes, you know. I will always have that human element. You know, I will always have some level of self-centeredness that wins out on occasions. But my life is not my life. I'm here to do God's work, right? And that's what, I don't know if I should share this, but I will share this. They say a lot of times, God won't give you what you want, but he'll give you what you need. I've been very involved in service my entire sobriety. God has given me everything that I want. I'm not saying that's going to be everybody's experience, but God has given me everything that I want, and so much that I didn't even know that I wanted, and God has given me everything that I need. You know, God has been so beautiful in my life, right? And I'm always very passionate about service, right? Because service meant so much to me, dude. Like, when I came in, like, nobody was messing with me. Nobody would answer my calls. Nobody would invite me to things. And I don't blame them. There was good reasons. Like, you don't want me around. It was a logical decision. But I had nobody. I was so alone. And even surrounded by people, I was alone. And even somebody looking me in my eyes and telling me they loved me, it had to be a lie. I am alone, right? And people who are strangers, when people that are my people aren't showing up anymore, and these strangers just want to take me to a meeting, see how I'm doing, talk to me about my problems, buy me food. If I call you and I'm on the phone for like an hour, like you're actually sitting there listening, and like we met 2 weeks ago, like that's insane. That's not like anything I've ever experienced anywhere on planet Earth, right? It saved my life. It meant so much to me. I was so broken. I was so miserable. I was so riddled with self-loathing. I hated myself so much, right? And these people showed up. So I'm very passionate. You know, I'm very passionate, and I'm obsessed with hearing the narrative. You know, like when somebody like picks up their medallion and they're like, they start to cry, and they're like, just some simple gesture that meant so much to them. Like, you never know what thing you will do that will like mean so much that it leads to this giant, beautiful sobriety. And then if that goes well, they help another like 10 or 100 people over their sobriety, or 1,000 people, whatever it is. And then all of those people have touching, beautiful stories, and it just grows and grows and grows. It's so beautiful. You know, the number one thing I could say about pre-sobriety is I didn't know what purpose meant. I never had it. Nobody ever asked me for advice or what I thought about a certain situation. I don't know if I could say them, but I had like really bad nicknames. They basically called me retarded, were the nicknames that I had back in the day, right? And nowadays, right, I get to be of service, I get to show up, and the absolute thing that I'm certain about is half the time it's not anything coming from my mind. It's not anything that I want to say. I don't know how, but somehow I've tapped into this like greater source of power, and God speaks through me, because sometimes for me it's very important not to assume what God's will is or how I'm supposed to deliver the message and be of service. I'll give you one example. There was this time that all my sponsors were calling me about the same problem over and over. No one's taking suggestions. And I was just fed up that day. And I just basically was like, dude, do whatever you want. You want this pain? I don't care. Go for it. I was mean. I was very blunt. I was very mean. You know what happened the next week? Within the next week, everybody called me to tell me how they were doing better. And that problem wasn't there anymore. Right? Never would I logically think God's will is for me to kind of be a dick to my sponsee here, right? But I don't know, right? And sometimes I just have to go with a push or intuition, you know? It's hard. It's really hard to talk about God, because again, that's one of those things, it's not meant to be put into words, right? But I am very passionate about service, and I'm very passionate about God, right? And I came into Alcoholics Anonymous not having any conception of God. Very interesting enough, I was in Delray Beach, there's this guy, and he was the most fake AA I had ever seen in my life, right? He talked the talk. I think he had like 14 years. And all he would do was hit on newcomers. He would talk the talk when he would share. 14 years sober, I think like 50 years old. hitting on 20-something-year-old newcomers. At the end of every meeting, you could always see that he was kind of trying to like keep it low-key so other people wouldn't notice. And anytime you share, like, I don't want to hear anything this man has to say. He goes against everything my sponsor's trying to teach me, right? And this guy is what opened me to God, right? The message can come from anyone. The only guy that I was like, out of anyone here, that is the one man I will not listen to, sat up at the podium and he shared that, you know, he had noticed that amongst like the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people that have like a looser conception of God, and then the people that have like a God that they really pray to, like some people have a group of drunks. That was my first 2 years of sobriety, it was a group of drunks. That was his as well. People who had that conception versus the people who had like a real like thing that they prayed to, they just seemed a little bit freer, a little bit happier, and a little bit looser. And I had noticed this as well. And he said, my sponsor always asks me, do you want to be happy or do you want to be right? Something my sponsor always asks me. And like, you want to give the right answer, but to be honest, I want to be right, like most of the time. But for the first time after hearing this, I decided I want to be happy. Right? So what does that mean today? I might be praying to nothing, right? My prayers might be going nowhere. My meditations might just be this like subconscious process with myself, and I'm gaslighting myself into these experiences that I think I feel. I don't know. Maybe that's a possibility. I don't care because I'm happier, right? And I also don't believe that. I have an insane amount of coincidences, you know, you could call it that, right? I have an insane amount of evidence that my God has worked in my life. And the one thing that I feel most certain about is everything that is my life, every beauty, every blessing, the friends, the role I get to play for my family, the just everything, you know, is that I have nothing to do with that, you know? At most, like 1 or 2%. Like, it's really just like all God, right? So, you know, I want to like end it on something good, but I don't want to ramble, so thank you guys for letting me.